This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Label Sternbach and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist and Regents professor, joins us. You've written two books about the coronavirus and the deadliest enemy and all the rest of it. What is the real prescription, Dr. Osterholm, for us in the wake of seeing where we are 4 years down the line? What is the real prescription? Yep. How should we conduct our lives?
Well, I think right now, if in fact you are someone who is not at risk of serious illness, meaning you're not older, you don't have underlying immune conditions, most people are living their lives pretty regularly. Now, however, if you're going to expose somebody who is in one of those groups, you know, for example, if you're going to go to grandpa and grandma's, or you're going to go to some place where there may be people who are at increased risk, then you should test beforehand. I know that falls often on deaf ears, but don't go. If you're positive, don't go. But otherwise, I think people are pretty much living their lives. If I could get everyone over 65 vaccinated every 6 months, make sure Paxlovid's available, and people wear N95 respirators in hospitals, that hasn't changed. That 10-day period still holds for that. And if we could get that done, Freddie, we could really, really reduce the impact that this virus is having, much lower than it ever has been since the start of it. So that's a hard message to get across because people, right now only 42% of people in long-term care facilities are vaccinated. What's wrong with that? That's wrong. And so I think that's where we're really concentrating on. So I think for otherwise healthy people like you and Chantel, enjoy life. And the only thing I would say, the added prescription we've learned from COVID is also be kind. Everybody be kind out there. I tell you, this world right now needs kindness. And if we could transmit kindness like COVID transmits, wouldn't we be in a much better place?
Oh, my gosh, we would. Yes. We would. Well, doctor, thanks for the prescription. And
it's always good to talk to you. I have to tell you, I do a lot of interviews with medically trained reporters, people who have medical backgrounds. Nobody asks me as good of questions as you do. You're amazing. I got to tell you, you're really good at this. I appreciate very much doing the interviews with you. It's an honor to do an interview with you, sir.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Have a good one. Have a good weekend. Bye bye, everybody.
We've got to leave it right there. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us this weekend. And if you'd like more information, you can always go to the FreddieBell.com website if you missed any portion of our interview today and learn more about how we can protect ourselves from COVID-19 and what recovery looks like. And this is New Beginnings. Long before Iowa star Caitlin Clark hit her first long-range three, Pearl Moore of Florence, South Carolina, set a scoring standard for women's basketball that has stood for 45 years at 4,061. And she joins us today. Hello, and your record-breaking career, Ms. Moore, in women's basketball with 4,061 career points is certainly more than Clark's at 3,685, and it's a testament to your incredible skill and dedication to the sport. Ms. Moore, as someone who knows what it takes to excel at the highest level of basketball, what are your thoughts on Caitlin's achievements and the future of the sport of basketball, women's sports in particular?
I think she has a phenomenal scoring career there at Iowa. She, like I said, she's a leader, team leader. She's a shooter, an exceptional shooter, and an exceptional passer. And being said that, women's basketball has grown so much that you can be in awe of it. I mean, it seemed like we were held down or not given its support, but I guess eyes are opening that women really can do some things given the chance.
Well, speaking of chances, how did you get your start in basketball? What lured you to the sport?
My mother was a domestic worker. My father worked as a pole marker at Coppers. And we lived in the country, kind of like sharecropping. And, of course, there's not a lot of money and everything, so Of course, we kids had to pick up, 11 siblings had to pick up something to do in the country. When you wasn't in school, summertime, and you wasn't doing tobacco, cotton, and all of that stuff, we made up our own sports. And a tennis ball, a rubber ball for a basketball in a peach basket, or nail the tire rim to the tree. Of course, there's stick ball and anything else. We used to cut tree limbs, little small tree limbs, so we could ride them as horses. Somebody would have a pinto where you cut the colors out and have it white. And we did all kind of crazy stuff. And after moving to the city, basketball was pretty much basketball and softball. Mm. Of course, you had to play softball out in the mosquitoes and the gnats and the flies. And basketball was indoor. And even though we did it a lot outside, but that was where I got interested in it.
Well, everybody, we're talking with basketball superstar Pearl Moore, who scored more than 4,000 points in her career. So speaking of points, how were you able to score so many points without benefit of that three-point line?
I guess it's a lot of hard work, as we say, a lot of repetition, watching guys mainly play, because, you know, we didn't have women to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you had to work maybe three times as hard as a guy to be able to get some of the agility that a guy carries. So it was a lot of work and repetition and everything to be able to do that. Not that I'm a giant at 5'7", or that was the kind of inch or two above what I really am. But you know how we do it back then.
Right.
Yeah, so you have to have a lot of work.
So what drove you to score so much in a game?
Winning, probably. I mean, I just didn't come down the court and shoot the ball. There was rebounding. There were steals. There were times you were left just out there. But, you know, if you're going to win, you got to score.
Did you have a shooting coach?
I was my shooting coach. Well, when you were younger, say like when I was 12 or getting a little bit older, you're not as strong to try to shoot farther out. So you had different kind of ways you got it up there from behind the head and all that stuff. But you worked on your shot. And that was one of the things that I did, because we didn't have like a rebounder, something that kick you the ball back out where you are. Mm-hmm. We had to run and chase your shots.
So you hustled.
So, yeah.
So tell us about how you went from college to professional basketball.
I always thought we would have a women's league when I was coming through college. I didn't really think about it when I was in high school, but after college, you're thinking when you're in college, well, when are we going to have some professional women's basketball? So that I had 6 hours to go, and New York drafted me. And I went up for the training camp. I think it was a week. And they said, well, you come on, and we'll pay for you to go to summer school. And I said, no, if I leave, I may not come back. So I finished. I went to training camp that couple of weeks. I came back, and I finished school. And plus, they didn't have any money to pay for me to go to summer school because the team folded.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That was the new year. We won the championship that year in New York, my first year in the Women's Basketball League. Then the next year, St. Louis, the New York team folded, but then St. Louis picked whatever teams folded. The other teams that were still around picked us up.
Mm-hmm.
And after that year, the league folded. So I went to Venezuela and played for a season and won a championship there. So professionally, 2 out of the 3 years that I played, I won championship.
Wow, so you've been a winner your whole career. And I'm just wondering, what do you think can be done now to ensure that pioneering players like yourself, a 66-year-old, receive the recognition and the appreciation that you rightfully deserve, both now and in the future?
To me, I think somebody asked me that question the other day. You're getting your flowers now while you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought I had my flowers then. Whether NCAA recognized the players of the AIAW is another story. But even though they recognized the coaches' wins, Tyra, Sylvia Hatcher, any other coach that coached in the AIW, even though they're recognizing those, they're leaving out all the AIW players per se. But I think God has given me my flowers in the course of me playing basketball up until now, and hopefully I'll still receive them. But it is nothing that I can say about anything that's going on now, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. I have been blessed.
Blessed indeed. You're enshrined in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame and the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. And you have a sports center named after you, Pearl Moore Basketball Center, in your hometown. What takes place there?
It's used mainly for kids' youth league basketball. And, of course, pickleball has took over some of it.
And so what would be your message to young men and young women in sports, and about the records and the achievements they make? What would be your final comment for us this morning?
My final comment would be, I don't think we've had players that are exactly alike. You can emulate players, but for my part, players should try to be themselves. Like I said, pick up a couple things here and there. Because you're not going to have another Michael Jordan. You're not going to have another Steph Curry. You're not going to have another LeBron James, Larry Bird, all of those people, and or a Lisa Leslie or a Cheryl Miller or Pearl Moore or Lucy Harris, those people. But you can always pick something up from these people, but it's always better for me, as I think God bless those that have their own.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today and talk about your wonderful career and also giving us a view into women's basketball and sports today. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
It's the weekend, and it is new beginnings, and it did happen this week. In 1961, the Peace Corps was established with an executive order signed by then-President John F. Kennedy. In 1962, the first Kmart opened in Garden City, Michigan. In 1968, country singer Johnny Cash married June Carter. In 69, New York Yankees slugger Mickey Mantle retired from baseball. It was also in that same year that Jim Morrison was arrested for lewd and lascivious behavior during a Doors concert in Miami. In 1978, Swiss grave robbers stole the coffin containing Charlie Chaplin's remains. The coffin and Chaplin were recovered several months later. In 1984, actor Jackie Coogan died at the age of 69. He's best remembered for his role as Uncle Fester on the television show The Addams Family. In 2002, under mounting pressure from prosecutors, the Archdiocese of Boston agreed to turn over the names of people allegedly molested by priests. In 2007, deadly tornadoes tore through parts of the South and Midwest, killing at least 9 people, including 8 in Enterprise, Alabama. The worst tornado cut a 5-mile swath through the city and destroyed Enterprise High School. In 2011, John Galliano, the head designer of Dior, was fired after damaging evidence appeared of him slurring anti-Semitic remarks at a Paris bar. And in 2013, TV actress and director Bonnie Franklin, from One Day at a Time, died of pancreatic cancer at the age of 69. It happened this week, and you're listening to New Beginnings.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151. 888-711-1151, or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi again, I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings, and joining us right now is Kathy McClear from AARP Minnesota. She is the state director for AARP, and she's joining us right now, and we're talking about a really important topic. It's brain health, and is there enough focus, in your opinion, on the ability and the agility of our brains?
Yeah, so Freddie, we are living longer, and that's a good thing, right? But we need our minds to stay engaged and be sharp just as long as our bodies are up and functioning. And so AARP really focuses on what we call the 6 pillars of brain health. And these are all activities that really support your brain health, and hopefully, you know, inspire you to take some action in your life to just stay sharp.
Do you mind going through the six for us today?
Yeah, these are some pretty easy to remember when we're talking about brain health, to remember to work on staying engaged. And so one of those tips is for staying socially engaged. We know that being socially isolated can be as bad for your health as smoking a pack of cigarettes. And so it's really important to maintain those connections in the community and stay socially engaged. To focus on ways that you can continue learning, whether it's doing a crossword puzzle or, you know, maybe playing Scrabble with your grandkids. So, you know, keeping your brain engaged by finding ways to continue learning, or maybe it's taking some community education classes or learning how to dance. Those are also some good things that can keep your brain engaged. We talk often about resources to manage stress. We know that stress is just not good for any part of our body and not good for our brain either. And so thinking about how do you manage stress, whether it's meditation or some relaxation techniques, some deep breathing, those kinds of things. Of course, staying healthy and fit. So what's good for your body is good for your brain. Getting out and taking a walk. We were talking beforehand about the sun staying up longer and giving people more opportunities to get out and take that walk. Improving your sleep, staying healthy and fit, and getting out and getting that exercise will help you sleep better. And so finding ways to improve your sleep. And then, of course, having a brain healthy diet. And so these are all the things that we talk about around the six pillars of brain health.
So staying socially engaged, continue learning, finding help to manage stress, healthy and fit, just your mind and body, improving your sleep, and enjoying a brain healthy diet. I know all of those are good. And I know we went through these fairly quickly. Is there a session coming up through AARP through which our listeners can learn more about this and to become more actively engaged?
Of course there is. So we have a session coming up. It's a good overview for anyone who's interested in learning more about brain health, where we'll share some of this information on brain health, lifestyle suggestions, and resources to learn more. It's at March 28th from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. at Arlington Hills Community Center, and that's on 1200 Payne Avenue in St. Paul.
All right. Is there a cost to join this particular session, Kathy?
There is no cost to join. We want people just to come and take advantage of the information, learn a little something, because that will help your brain and stay socially engaged. So you check two of those things off the box right there. And of course, people can register at aarp.org/MN events.
Do you have a final thought for our audience this morning on New Beginnings about brain health and staying socially engaged?
You know, it's never too late to focus on your brain health. Even if you have a few years on you, you can still learn. You still have the ability to get those neurons firing in your brain and learning something new. So it's never too late to focus on your brain health.
All right. She's Kathy McClear, AARP's state director from Minnesota. And it's time for my song of the week. And this week is Billy Joel. Coming soon, the 100th Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden special airs Sunday, April 14th on CBS. This is Joel's first concert to air on a broadcast network. The concert special will be a shot at Joel's record-breaking 100th consecutive performance at Madison Square Garden as a part of his franchise run on March 28th. Joel has sold out at Madison Square Garden more than any other artist since his first show at the venue on December 14th, 1978. Through his final residency show this July, every single one of his concerts at Madison Square Garden has been a sellout. And here's one of your favorite songs that I'm sure he'll do. This song became his first hit, and he's closed out countless concerts with it over the years. It's Billy Joel's Piano Man, our Song of the Week.
Shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin. He says, son, can you play me a memory? I'm not really sure how it goes, but it's sad and it's sweet and I knew it complete when I wore a younger man's clothes. La 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 la. Song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us feeling all right. Now, John at the bar is a friend of mine. Gets me my drinks for free, and he's quick with a joke or to light up your smoke, but there's some place that he'd rather be. He says, Bill, I believe this is killing me, as a smile ran away from his face. Well, I'm sure that I could be a movie star if I could get out of this place. La la da 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 da. Now Paul is a real estate novelist who never had time for a wife, and he's talking with David, who's still in the Navy and probably will be for life. Stoned. Yes, they're sharing a drink they call loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Saturday, and the manager gives me a smile, 'cause he knows that it's me they've been coming to see, to forget about life for a while. And the piano, it sounds like a carnival, and the microphone smells like a beer, and they sit at the bar and put bread in my jar and say,
that's Billy Joel's Piano Man, my song of the week. I'm Freddie Bell, and I invite you to download the Freddie Bell Radio Show's app, and let's get together and talk about the music. On the lighter side of my desk this weekend on New Beginnings, alcohol-related deaths surged during the pandemic. That's according to numbers from the CDC, which found that there were over 480 deaths per day from excessive drinking in the United States during the height of the pandemic. Officials say social isolation, stress, and delays in getting medical care could have been a factor. Alcohol carryout and home deliveries were also more available, according to the CDC. They say spikes in deaths could give states a reason to make alcohol less accessible. A team of scientists from the University of Queensland discovered the nearly 10-million-year-old species, which they named the Northern Green Anaconda. A professor who led the team says one of the female anacondas they came across measured 20 feet long. The discovery was made while filming National Geographic's upcoming series, Pole to Pole with Will Smith. And monarch butterflies are dwindling in numbers. The World Wildlife Fund led an annual survey of the species and tallied the second lowest number of monarchs on record. According to this year's estimate, the eastern monarch butterfly colonies took up 2.2 acres of regional forest, which is over 50% less than during the 22-23 winter season. Officials say monarch butterflies have a key role in sustaining plant ecosystems, but their habitat is depleting from heat and drought that has been brought on by climate change. And an Arkansas family has welcomed their second leap year baby. Samantha and Zach Dennis welcomed their second child born on February 29th, 16 years after the birth of the older sibling. The children were both born at the same clinic with the same doctors. 16-year-old Caden was born in 2008, and Haven was born this year. Haven is the family's rainbow baby and seventh child after losing a baby in 2022. From the lighter side of my desk, I'm Freddie Bell. We've got more to come. Stay with us.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Nobody likes seeing their account drop by 20%, let alone 50% that many experienced in 2008. Join us this week as we talk about three ways to protect your portfolio from market volatility. I'm Freddie Bell, and I have the opportunity to sit next to Label Sternbach. It's really great to be with you, and your website is yieldsforyou.com. What type of information at a high level might we find there, Label?
You will find anything you need to know, or really everything you need to know, if you are transitioning into retirement. So as you start contemplating those questions of should I retire? Do I have enough money to retire? When should I roll over my money? How should I do it? All those questions that you don't really quite know the answers to yet, you can find them on yieldsforyou.com. We've got resources and guides and calculators and all kinds of tools that you can use to really figure out your financial situation. And our team is always there ready to help.
Interesting. I've got listener questions for you this week, Label. One is, why does the market go up and down? And a companion question to that is, why can't it just go up in a nice, smooth line and make life easy for me?
It would be nice, right? It would be nice if it just went up in a straight line, right? It's if you zoom out on the chart, right, I promise you that's what happens. The problem is that on the way up, you know, sometimes we got, you know, little platforms, little vestibules that we get, you know, landed on, and we're moving sideways for a little bit. Sometimes we go, you know, a few steps down. You know,
Texas
the market
two-step.
Doesn't move. Huh?
A Texas two-step.
Yeah, yeah. We don't, you know, moving in a straight line would be just boring, right?
Right, right.
But, you know, in all seriousness, the reason why the market doesn't move in a straight line is because the market is made up of people, right? It's easy to forget when you're looking at a chart with screens and with numbers and, you know, lines, and you're looking at your account balance and you're like, well, you know, this is a science, right? It's there's math here. There's, you know, it's you invest in this and this is what happens, right? No, that's not what happens. What we're investing in is in, you know, we're investing in something that is really dictated by people, right? So, you know, Warren Buffett, he invests in companies, right? So he's buying the company or he's buying a large percentage of the company, and he's buying it for fundamental reasons. But the value of his portfolio, right, or the value of anyone's portfolio is based on the price that you would get if you were to sell it today. right? Just like your house value fluctuates from day to day, but nobody's coming to make you an offer every single day, right? Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to unload your house, right, you would have to go shop around. You would have to find a buyer. It would take time. With our retirement accounts, right, or our investment accounts, right, there's a ready market that's just ready and willing and able to take that off our hands. You know, our days where they'll take it off our hands at a steep discount and they'll laugh to the bank. And then there are other days where we get to laugh to the bank, but it's based on the price that someone else is willing to pay. And when you think about, you know, what are the things that decide what someone's willing to pay, the intrinsic value of the thing is very rarely what drives the price, right? You value your house or your car more than what someone else will. Why? Because it's your car, it's your house, right? You have memories in it. You live in there. It makes you feel comfortable. You don't want to move, right? Same thing with your stocks, right? With your ETFs, with whatever's in your investment account. You know, if you look at what the value of the underlying companies are and their intrinsic value, it may not match up to the value that your account is or what somebody's willing to pay for it. And so the market moves based on what people's perception of the future is, based on what they're willing to pay for today.
Interesting. We're talking with Lebel Sternbach, and we're talking about market fluctuation. And another question is, so if a person just put their money into a bank CD or a high-yield savings account, the question is, then I don't have to worry about market volatility. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, if you just park your money in the bank, right? So yeah, you don't have to worry about market volatility, but you got to worry about a lot of other stuff, right? So you're exchanging one type of risk for another type of risk. So with a bank CD, right, what you really got to worry about is, are you getting paid enough money for locking up your capital, right? Remove the word bank from there and say, your Uncle Bob will offer you, will offer to pay you 5% for your money. Right now, you think, or whatever that rate is, right? Think to yourself, why is Uncle Bob willing to do that for me? Mm-hmm. Right? He's not doing it out of the kindness of his heart. And he's not doing it because he's turning around and he's taking on a huge amount of risk with that money. Right? He's doing that because he can turn around and very safely make a lot more money. So the question to you is that 5% enough of a risk, right? Is that enough of a reward for you not to worry about it, right? And when we're talking about banks, right, and what you really need to be asking yourself is, instead of, okay, now we're not on the Wall Street roller coaster, but am I beating inflation, right? Because that's the silent killer that we always need to be aware of. And I need you to think about inflation as no different than market losses, right? Every single year, there are two people who come knocking on your door for money, right? The first one's the IRS, right? Congress comes knocking on your door for money, and they take it whether you like it or not. The second person sneaks in behind the first person, and you don't even see them coming, but they're just pulling money out of your pocket, right? And they're taking it. And that's inflation, right? Inflation's there every single year, taking your money, but it's not a line item on your statement, right? You don't write a check to inflation. What happens, though, is one day you turn around and you can't afford groceries. Mm. And that's why we need to make sure that not only is our money growing, but it's growing faster than inflation. So next time you're contemplating buying a CD or an annuity or whatever it is, any investment, really, you got to ask yourself the question, is this growing faster than inflation? Am I actually making money on this deal? And if I'm not making money on this deal, then should I be doing it? And or how much of my money should I be doing this with, right? Because it's okay to not make a huge amount of money. It's okay to even lose a little bit of money if it's, you know, if it makes sense in the overall grand scheme of things, but it needs to make sense.
So how do you get your cake and eat it too in that scenario that you just outlined? And how can you get the ups of the market without just bottoming out altogether?
So you need to start looking for, you know, there are investments out there that allow you to eat your cake and to have your cake and eat it too. These are things that didn't really exist 5 years ago, or they weren't very common 5 years ago. They're becoming more and more common. Generally speaking, these are things that are not necessarily available directly to the public. So directly to the public, there are some that exist in ETF form. There are some that exist through, you know, market links, through multi-year guaranteed annuities or MIGAs. There are things like registered index link annuities, and I'll describe what all these are in a second. I'm just giving you these terms because these are things that, you know, you shop around long enough, you'll find them. What I want you to be aware of is that for every product that you come across as a consumer, right, you as a retail investor, you're not a hedge fund, you're not an investment advisor, you're not a broker dealer, right? You're not plugged into the finance world, right? You're just you walking down the street going to your bank. For every product that you see available to you, there's 100 that are available to the exclusive world of, you know, investment advisors, investment bankers, and in the finance world, that offer, you know, a whole host of better options. And this category of investments, which have been around for a very long time, they used to be the exclusive realm of investment banks and insurance companies, but now, you know, they slowly, you know, have worked their way lower in the market. So now they're available to big advisors like myself. And what they do is they offer two things. They offer some form of principal protection, right? So whether that's, you know, contractual, and there's lots of ways that the principal is protected, right? So you can have like a market link CD where it's a bank CD and it's got FDIC insurance, and you're guaranteed that at maturity, you're going to get your principal back. You got some form of principal protection, and then you have some form of upside exposure. And literally the ways that that can be varied is, as you know, you can't count the number of ways, right? It's there's an unlimited possibilities, and every single day there's a new option being created for how to participate in the upside of the market with some form or complete principal protection.
We only have seconds left, but I have to squeeze in this listener question, if you don't mind. And it reads, what if I just put my money label into a target date fund like I did when I was working? That worked out real well for me so far. Won't it protect me like right now?
So the problem with target date funds is that they're very formulaic, right? It's an algorithm of, you know, stocks versus bonds. And the problem is that what happens when both of them are risky? What happens when bonds are just as risky as stocks, right? Bonds are not inherently less risky than stocks. They just tend to have less volatility because there's less changes to interest rates. But during years, when interest rates are changing, they become just as volatile as stocks. So right now, probably isn't the best time to be owning a target date fund. Mm-hmm. Or if you do have a target date fund, you either want to have one. I mean, honestly, I would probably get ones that are more, you know, pushed out to 10 or 15 years from now so that they're not trying to rebalance the, you know, the bond section. But what I've been doing for our clients is pulling them out of the target date funds. And even if it's still in the 401k, separate it out into the money market and an S&P 500 so that at least you can dial the risk to your comfort level rather than relying on them and just, you know, either not getting the upside or not getting the downside protection.
If you'd like to learn more about how Yields for You can help you to create a personalized, low risk, low volatility retirement solution designed just for you and for your peace of mind, you're invited to book your free, no obligation call at yieldsforyou.com. I'll say it again, yields, the number four, the letter U.com. Thank you for joining me on New Beginnings, and here are today's words to the wise. To hope is to live. It captures the essence of a life imbued with optimism and anticipation. This simple yet powerful phrase underscores the idea that the very act of hoping breathes life into our experiences, infusing our journey with purpose, resilience, and a positive outlook. It's a reminder that embracing hope is an intrinsic part of truly living, shaping our aspirations and influencing the richness of our existence. Today's words to the wise, to hope is to live. Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
What does it mean in unity when we say, you have come forth from God, your creator? Or centuries ago, and many still follow the tradition of the Rosicrucians, who made their foundational statement, ex Deo nascimur, in Latin, but meaning, we come forth or are born of God, come forth from God. And they knew that meant power. Possibility, the ability to heal yourself, your relationships, your world, because you had come forth from the divine spirit that makes all things possible. The resurrected Christ, the risen one, recorded in our book of Revelations, that is the revelation that came to John on the island of Patmos, heard those words. Behold, I make all things new. What is it to know that power? That you have this ability, not in your individual personality, not in James, but in the fact that you have come forth from life, all things are possible. Myrtle Fillmore, who passed from this world in 1931, in the 1920s, one of the very few sound recordings we have of her voice, which I love to do because she sounded like Eleanor Roosevelt. We must teach our children to pray. To pray the prayer of faith. A prayer that we sing. And a prayer that sometimes mystifies us if we don't approach it rightly. The prayer of faith written by Hannah More Cohos in the 19th century. Myrtle found it, and she realized it was a tool by which she could align herself with her truth as God's creation. It's similar to how we end our prayer of protection every Sunday. It's not part of the prayer, but many of us choose to seal that prayer with the statement, all is well. It's a statement that goes back to the mystic Julian of Norwich in the 14th century. She has the fame of having written a book called Divine Revelations, which made her, as far as we know, the first woman to publish a book in the Western world in the 1300s. And she wrote, all is well, all is well, all manner of thing shall be well. It was a way as a mystic, it was a way for Myrtle Fillmore to lift herself, to align herself with higher truth. Do you have the flu, take your temperature, comes out, the thermometer says 103, and you go, all is well, all is well. There is no fever. Or those New Thought ministers in hell that say, it's not hot and I'm not here. as an idea of denying. No, Myrtle said, when I pray to God, she asked her students, she said, when I pray, to whom do you think I pray? And someone muttered, well, to God, of course. And she said, no, I'm praying to myself. That is to lift myself from my limited ideas into my truth as God's creation. And in that truth, all is well. In my everyday temporal life that changes, things may not appear to me that all are well. But you lift yourself to the high truth, and then you know all is well. Myrtle liked that prayer, and just the opening line, you can hear how she's trying to capture for herself because she had her own healing challenges and challenges throughout her life. God is my help in every need. God does my every hunger feed. God walks beside me, guides my way through every moment of the day. That means here, now. Not in Jerusalem in Jesus' day. Not in Abraham's desert. Not in Moses, even when he was on the mountaintop. A prayer is to lift you here and now into your power, into what can be, in what transforms, heals, inspires, empowers you. The Fillmore son, Lowell Fillmore, there's a book written about him called The Unsung Hero. And that title comes from the fact that so many of us don't remember that they appointed their eldest son, Lowell, to be the business manager, ultimately president, of Unity School, of our headquarters, in 1909. He spent his entire life until he retired in 1965. He faced many challenges in the Unity operations, in keeping it going, and keeping it growing, and keeping it expanding. And he wrote these words that somebody thoughtfully engraved into a bronze plaque that's on the grounds of Unity Village, and it expresses how he approached the challenges. First, people who knew him said when a challenge came, or even a new idea or project for Unity to take on, what was the question he asked? Well, most of us would say, well, how much will that cost? Lowell's response was always, how many people will be helped? That's how he made his decision. Not the cost, but how much good it would do, how much God it would express. And so he wrote these words about his own challenge. When for a purpose I had prayed and prayed and prayed until my words seemed worn and bare with arduous use, and I had knocked and asked and knocked again and asked again, and all my fervor and persistence brought no hope, I paused to give my weary brain a rest and cease my anxious human cry. In that still moment, after self had tried and failed, there came a glorious vision of God's power, and lo, my prayer was answered, that power.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. And it's National Read Across America Day. The annual event is part of Read Across America, an initiative on reading created by the National Education Association. This Motivational and Awareness Day calls all children and youth in every community across the United States to celebrate reading. It encourages them to read wherever they are. Great ways to inspire reading in children include keep books everywhere you spend time. Put them in the car, in every room of the house, and tuck them in backpacks and purses. Make them easily accessible. You can visit the library often. You can get caught reading. Children imitate what they see the adults do around them, whether they see you read a newspaper, a novel, or let them know that reading is a cool thing to do. Read to your children. No matter their age, reading aloud strengthens their vocabulary and their language skills. It also opens up opportunities for discussions. And have your children read to you, too. You never know what they might learn. It's National Read Across America Day, and this is New Beginnings. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.